To keep the peace, to build the future, the new mission of your AAF. Army Air Forces, in cooperation with the American Broadcasting Company, present Your AAF, a report to the American people on its continuing operations today throughout the world and its adventures and research, which are pioneering for your better world tomorrow. Tonight, you will hear...
From Walla Walla, Washington, an operation of Project Firefly, the all-Negro paratroopers who fight fire from the air.
From Washington, the nation's capital, a frank and direct answer to the public's questions on demobilization by Major General Fred L. Anderson.
From Wright Field, birthplace of American air power, an eyewitness account of the sensational pilotless plane.
From Hollywood, screen star Reginald Denny, inventor of the pilotless plane, forecasting its future peacetime use.
And as always, the singing voices and orchestra of the AAF bring you the best of the top music of the day.
Like all the world, the eyes of the Air Forces are turning toward the future, searching among the techniques developed for war, those which may be turned more profitably toward peace. Among these is a technique for fighting forest fires, perfected by an all-Negro paratrooper unit trained in cooperation with the United States Forest Service. This job is known as Project Firefly. While our AAF on-the-spot reporter was with these men gathering material for a story, an emergency call came in for help in fighting a huge forest fire blazing through the Northwest. With the paratroopers went our AAF reporter. And now, direct from the scene of the fire by Army wire recorder, he brings you an eyewitness account. Go ahead, Project Firefly.
This is your AAF reporter, Sergeant Jack Lasuli, speaking to you from a C-47 plane of the Troop Carrier Command, hovering 1,000 feet over a raging forest fire in Northwest Oregon. Great billows of smoke are drifting out of the canyon below us. And in the very midst of the freeze, we can see individual fires burning fiercely. In this plane and in other Troop Carrier Command planes flying beside us are the men of the famous Project Firefly, United States Army paratroopers of the all-Negro 555th Parachute Infantry Battalion, which have been rushed here to fight this growing menace to one of the richest and most vital regions in America. The pilot of this plane is Colonel Frank McNeese, who commanded the 435th Group of the 9th Troop Carrier Command, which carried the 1st Airborne Division to the beaches of Normandy and later across the Rhine. Now we're starting to swing around. The dub master, Captain Richard Williams, executive officer of this paratroop battalion, has located the drop zone. a small clearing circled by blazing trees. Now he's dumping out small parachutes that catch in the wind and drift down. Let's ask Captain Williams about those parachutes. Captain, if you're not too busy, could you tell me why you're dropping those empty parachutes?
They're to check the wind velocity. Excuse me a minute, Sergeant. Jump master pilot. More to the right. They make this point. You see, Sergeant, these parachutes fall at the same speed and in the same direction as the men themselves. We can't take any chances, you can see.
Yes, I certainly can see. These paratroopers will actually drop within a few hundred feet of the outskirts of the fire. There is no room for the slightest error. Captain, how many fires have your men fought so far this season?
This makes the 23rd fire in the last 6 weeks. That adds up to more than 450 individual jumps. Well, it looks like we're all right now. Sergeant, so if you excuse me, I'll go back to work. Jump master pilot, this is a pay ride.
Well, I wish there were more time to talk to more of these men, but I see that the green light has just blinked on, and this Operation Firefly is about to begin.
Tango!
The men scramble to their feet. The men hook their static lines to the anchor line.
Hold up my equipment, Jack!
Just as they go out the door, I'm trying to count them. There they go. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And they're out to fight that fire. They're all out. All 8 parachutes have already opened, and the men are drifting slowly toward the clearing along the burning trees. The first group of paratroopers from another plane are landing in the clearing now. Yes, we can see them unhooking their chutes and rushing to the firefighting equipment that has been dropped with them. Within a few minutes, the men of Project Firefly will be fighting this very dangerous fire, less than 2 hours after it was first reported, and at least 20 hours before they could have reached the fire by any other means. So when peace is in war, the Troop Carrier Command and the Army Air Forces lives up to its pledge to get where it counts, with what is needed, and to get there first. This is your AAF reporter returning you to New York.
After 4 years, more or less, of searching the skies for a bomber's moon, it's easy for this sergeant and his air crew to spot this one for what it is. Only a paper moon.
Oh, it's only a paper moon hanging over a cardboard sea. Thought it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
Under a paper moon.
Yes, it's only a canvas sky. Sailing over a muslin tree. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
Without your love,
it's a honky-tonk parade. It's a melody played in a penny arcade. It's the Barnum and Bailey world, just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
Under a paper moon. Hoo-wee, hoo-wee, hoo-wee. You know it's only a paper moon sailing over, sailing a cardboard sea.
But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
It's only a canvas sky over a muslin tree, hanging around just for you and me.
But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
Without your love, it's a honky-tonk parade. Without your love,
It's a melody played in a Penny arcade.
It's a Barnum and Bailey world. Hoo-wee.
Just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believe in me.
It wouldn't be make-believe if you believe in me.
The efficient and speedy machinery which fed manpower into America's armed forces has swung into reverse. Demobilization is the number one home front job of the day. But for millions of American families, from wives, parents, and sweethearts impatient for the return of their loved ones, comes a flood of questions. And two of the most recurrent are these.
I haven't seen my boy in nearly 3 years. Please tell me what's being done to get him home.
My son's out in the Philippines now with enough points to get out right away. What's all this business about sending him to a separation center in the United States first? Why can't he be discharged overseas and shipped straight home?
For the answer to these questions, your AAF brings you the man charged with the responsibility of expediting AAF separations. By Army Wire Recorder, we take you to Washington to hear from Major General Fred L. Anderson, Assistant Chief of Air Staff for Personnel. Go ahead, Washington and General Anderson.
I am glad to have this opportunity to answer at least two of the questions that have been flooding in during these recent weeks. I only wish it were possible to talk personally to everyone who has an individual problem. You, of course, realize that this is impossible. I shall take these two questions up in order. First, what is being done to speed separation? The Army Air Forces, on September 5th, received authority from the War Department to establish its own separation centers. I can announce tonight that many of these centers are now in operation. The 43 Air Forces installations already selected have been chosen so that distances between these stations and the veterans' hometowns will be kept at a minimum. We will handle only Air Forces personnel now stationed in the United States. Our veterans now returning from overseas duty will be processed at the regular War Department separation centers. Under this authority, our installations will handle the 177,000 man backlog of air personnel entitled to separation now in this country. To this task, we have assigned carefully selected officers whose instructions are to move these men back to civilian life as quickly as is consistent with thorough final processing. This brings us to the second question. In brief, why can't the separation process be simplified? In separating Air Forces personnel qualified for release, we have two responsibilities. The first, to get a man home as soon as possible. I've already discussed. The second is to be sure this man is fully aware of all the benefits a grateful government has provided for him. He must be advised of his full privileges under the GI Bill of Rights. His government insurance benefits must be carefully presented in order that he may not be deprived of any of those benefits. It is necessary, too, for his future protection, that we make certain that all his military and financial records are complete and up to date. In short, it would seem better to delay a man's discharge one day than see him suffer later on for want of adequate processing. These two responsibilities are contradictory in the matter of time, and our task is to assure that a balance is maintained between them. We are charged with separating at least 69% of our enlisted strength and more than 72% of our officers to reduce to our post-war air forces. As of July 31st, our strength was more than 2.25 million. We are undertaking this large task with the same spirit which was carried into battle over Germany and Japan.
Thank you, General Anderson.
One month ago, for most GIs, the reigning Broadway hits
for a matter of at most a passing mention in a letter from home. Now, so quickly has the picture changed that many of them will be back in time to see and hear them, in honor of which the singing voices and the orchestra of the AAF play a medley from one of these, Carousel.
June is busting out all over the meadow and the hill.
Buds are busting out of bushes and the romping river pushes every little wheel that wheels beside the mill.
June is busting out all over, the feeling is getting so intense.
That the young Virginia creepers have been hugging double jeepers out of all the morning glories on the fence.
Because it's June, 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 just because it's
feature on your AAF revealed to the public for the first time an actual demonstration of a scientific achievement pioneered and developed for the Army Air Forces. The radio-controlled plane, invented by the prominent picture and stage actor Reginald Denny, from whom you will hear later, and perfected in the vast laboratory of the Air Force. We take you now by Army wire recorder to Wright Field, Dayton, Ohio, for a first-hand demonstration. Go ahead, Wright Field.
This is your AAF reporter, Captain Bob Van Camp, speaking by wire recorder from the Wright Field flight line, standing beside a miniature airplane that flies and does maneuvers in the clouds all by itself. It carries no pilot. Instead, it's radio controlled. They call it the OQ-3 in the Army language, but I call it a wonderful new idea in aviation. It's mounted on a steel catapult and stretched into position on long elastic shock cords. The OQ-3 is ready to go, like a rock pulled back in an overgrown slingshot. Lieutenant Pete Cerussi of New York City has helped develop the OQ airplane, and he's going to demonstrate this one for us. And at our side, explaining what's going on, is Captain Harry Dunlop of Placerville, California. Captain, who got the bright idea for a radio-controlled plane?
Believe it or not, it was a movie star.
Not Donald Duck.
No, it was Reginald Denny. Wright Field's Equipment Laboratory developed the plane from his original model. Our aircraft radio laboratory, together with several industrial companies, worked out the radio equipment. Watch, we're going to start it up now. Okay, men.
While we're getting set, Captain, I'm wondering just what the term OQ means.
O is a symbol meaning simply that the plane carries no pilot. It flies by itself.
Now, what does the Q mean?
Q stands for remote control. The box in Lieutenant Cerussi's hand completely controls the plane during takeoff, flight, and landing.
The box Lieutenant Cerussi is holding has a simple handle and one button. Just how does this serve as a pilot?
I can explain better if you listen to what's coming over this headset. Hear this?
Yeah.
That sound is the signal the operator hears over these earphones when the plane is in steady flight. Now listen and watch the plane as I move it stick back.
The elevator of the plane is now moving up. No human hand or wire touched the plane. The motion was completely radio controlled.
Now watch what happens when I push this handle forward.
The elevator is moving again. Now it's pointing down.
That puts the plane in a dive position. By moving the stick to the left and the right, we control the rudder. Put the plane in the left or right bank. We can roll it, loop it, anything you want.
That I'd like to see.
Ready, Pete?
Okay! Let go!
There she goes. Just like a rock from a boy's slingshot, the plane has flipped off the catapult at 65 miles an hour, and now it's climbing fast. Lieutenant Cerussi beside me is operating the radio box that controls this little plane. Now he's moving the stick from side to side, and the little OQ plane is banking and rolling just like its big brothers in the AAF. It's absolutely weird watching it. Say, Lieutenant, bring her in a little closer, will you?
Come to Papa, baby.
Lieutenant Cerussi has brought the plane in a dive right over it. You probably heard its approach, and you should have seen everybody duck. She zoomed. By now, she's going into a steep climb at 150 miles an hour. Say, Captain, what are we using these little radio-controlled planes for now?
We've found they're ideal for target practice because they do everything a real plane does. Almost every branch of the service uses them to train anti-aircraft gunners.
That sounds like a great expense, losing a plane for every flight.
But we don't. We never lose a pilot, and we seldom lose a plane. When we want the plane back, we just push this button on the side of the control box. Now watch.
The engine on the plane up there is stopped. The trap door springs open, and a parachute looms out above the plane. It's now swinging gently to earth. As you stand here and watch this plane float down, you can't help but let your mind wander. You can see the start of a new world in the air.
Yeah. Think what it'll be like to lie in bed and send yourself to work by radio control.
Well, thank you, Captain Harry Dunlop and Lieutenant Pete Cerussi. We've just watched a demonstration of the Air Technical Service Command's radio-controlled target plane, the amazing OQ-3. Today, it's the smallest airplane in the Army Air Forces, but it's sure to lead the way to great new conquests of the sky. We return you now to your AAF in New York.
And now for our guest who played a vital role in the development of this amazing pilotless plane, we take you to your AAF reporter on the West Coast. Go ahead, Hollywood.
This is your AAF radio reporter in Hollywood. Standing beside me at the microphone is a man whom millions know as a star of stage, screen, and radio, but whom very few know as an equally bright light in the field of science. For the inventor of the remarkable pilotless plane you have just heard demonstrated is none other than Mr. Reginald Denny.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for those few well-chosen words, Sergeant Gage.
Not at all, Mr. Denny. We'd like a few from you in return, as a matter of fact. For example, just when did your experiments on radio-controlled aircraft begin?
Back in 1932, and I'm afraid most people who just heard about it put it down as another crackpot scheme by an actor who should stay in pictures and leave scientific development to others. But by 1935, my associates and I had a semblance of radio control, though there were still many bugs to be worked out. Then we had a test flight of the radio plane before Army observers, and that's a story in itself.
Why? What happened?
Everything in the book, and many things not in the book. Actually, the plane was not ready for a thorough demonstration. We were not even certain if it could be controlled from the ground for any appreciable length of time.
Well, that sounds like you were really on the spot, Mr. Denny. Was the test successful?
We were a whooping success. The plane dived and zoomed and looped, and everyone thought our radio control was wonderful.
Well, that must have been quite a thrill. All the things you'd planned worked the first time out.
Yes, except that our plane went through all those aerobatics without any direction from us. It was completely out of control.
Well, what happened when the Army authorities learned the truth?
Surprisingly enough, they were still impressed and told us to keep working on it, so we did. In 1939, we were given our first order by Wright Field for 3 radio control planes, and when completed, they climbed to 5,000 feet, were controllable, and flew at 70 miles per hour.
Well, that plant at Van Nuys, California, looks like it could turn out considerably more than 3 planes, Mr. Denny.
Yes, indeed it can. Our quota, when the war ended, was 40 planes a day. And the speed of our latest model is in excess of 200 miles an hour.
Well, many people who saw the radio plane for the first time thought it was a toy. But we know now that it served as a target for training anti-aircraft and gunners of all the services. Have you heard whether it really helped, Mr. Denny?
As a matter of fact, the radio plane has been given much of the credit for our success in thwarting the Jap suicide planes. Only by training on radio planes that accurately simulated the maneuvers of the dreaded kamikazes were the gunners able to develop a technique for blasting the real suicide planes out of the sky.
And now in peace, what is the future of the radio-controlled plane?
As limitless as the future of all aviation, once our people realize the role that air power must play in maintaining the peace. In my opinion, the radio plane will be used for crop dusting, weather observation, forest firefighting, mail delivery, and hundreds of other peacetime flying jobs. But the most valuable contribution of the radio plane will be in firing the imagination of our youngsters, in giving them a greater love and understanding of planes and of the sky. These kids are the Bongs, the Doolittles, and the Arnolds of tomorrow, and on their shoulders rest the future of the Air Forces and of the world.
Thank you, Reginald Denny. We return you to your AAF in New York.
Our thanks also to you, Mr. Denny, for you, like millions of other Americans, both in and out of uniform, have contributed to the building of the mightiest Air Force in the world. And this weapon, forged by a free people in war, shall be their shield in a people's peace. This is your AAF.
During the last half hour, you've been listening to the official program of the Army Air Forces, Your AAF, presented in cooperation with the American Broadcasting Company. Your AAF is one of a group of programs, Time for Americans, presented by the American Broadcasting Company in the belief that never did so many need to know so much. Join us next week for the music of the AAF Orchestra and singing voices. Answers to the public questions direct from our general officers, the latest word in scientific development from our vast laboratories, and first-hand reports of our continuing operations throughout the world to keep the peace, to build the future, today and tomorrow's mission of your AAF.
Shortwave to the troops overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.